Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right, Senator Dan McKay.
Hey, Natalie, everybody else?
And on the political left, Jim DeBacchus.
Hey, everybody, we're so excited, we're running for mayor.
Okay, it's really Dan McKay pretending to be Jim.
Our
other side of the aisle had some problems today, and so
You're getting one side of the aisle.
You're getting one side of the aisle, and honestly, I'm sure the Dems are all freaking out right now that we're going to win everybody's hearts and minds over and completely turn Salt Lake City red.
Well, and I take offense, right, because I'm always offended that the middle doesn't have a voice or a spot.
Oh, Natalie, you should have a voice!
Because there's one side of the aisle, you know. And
how's my Jim impression?
So, Dan, let's just have some political banter about what's going on and see where it takes us. I think our listeners will enjoy just some good old conversation.
Yeah.
This week, President Donald Trump announced his 2020 reelection campaign.
And raise your hand if you were surprised. I mean.
And that he did it in Florida.
I'm surprised. He was horrible. The Trump president is just terrible.
That's Jim again. Keep it down, Jim.
Yeah, it would not be something to like. But were there any surprises?
I was surprised with his fundraising effort. I mean, $250 million over a 24-hour period in fundraising? That's a big number.
A big deal.
I don't care who you are. That's a big number.
Yeah.
And so to see maybe it's $25 million. I can't remember. Off the top of my head, I might have a zero off. Anyway, needless to say, it was huge.
Caught your attention.
Yeah.
Interesting to me that he's picking Florida. He calls it his second home. It's also an incredibly important swing state. But through all of this in the last little while, the various polling agencies, I guess some leaked polls that showed that Trump wasn't doing so well in states that he took, in 2018.
And anybody that remembers
2018.
So anybody that remembers, 2016, and looks back at polling data from 2016, there was no room for Trump victory in any of those states.
Yeah, polls didn't work.
And so my question, like, I get it. And if you're the president, you're concerned or you're the, those things. But he has shown the polls don't matter when it comes to Donald Trump. They just don't. I don't know why they're broken, or at least they were broken in 2016.
Tell you why it's broken. It's going to be the sample that you get.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, because I believe the science of it, but
you're
not getting a representative sample, and so you don't get accurate result.
Doesn't matter who's on the left. I mean,
it's really early.
Yeah, if the left doubles down and throws out some extremely liberal candidate, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Those numbers will flip. Right now, it's an anonymous Democratic candidate. And really, if you're a president, you just look at those and your job approval numbers, and there's not a delta between the two. I mean, it's small.
Yeah.
And so it's probably a test for just job approval. And, there's a lot of questions about President Trump and where things are going.
Yeah. What it signaled for me, Dan, is it started. It's here.
Mm-hmm.
We have the town hall debates starting on CNN, whatever. You have the president
having
announced.
Have you had a chance to watch any of them?
I watched their town halls where the individuals were represented, but the debates I have not. I think they're just now coming. But I'm taking a lot of interest. I'll tell you what I'm taking interest in, and I would be helpful to have someone on the left on this, but you and I can kind of...
I can do it! I know exactly what Jim would say!
We can go down this path a little bit. But the term socialism is capturing, a lot of attention in the media. I was in a setting where Governor Herbert was speaking to a group of school teachers, and he started talking about socialism and capitalism. And I'm just kind of looking at him thinking, is this really where we're at? Where the governor of Utah has to defend capitalism in front of some school teachers. But then after he left, I listened to some of the comments from the school teachers, and it didn't resonate with him what he was saying.
Really?
Well, because you have, democratic socialism,
and
that's very different than Cold War socialism.
Sure.
And Herbert comes from a Cold War socialism perspective that these Gen Xers and millennials, they don't have a clue what particularly millennials don't have a clue what he's talking about.
Yeah. And it's hard when you haven't felt it and you don't know its impacts or influence, and there's various shades of what socialism are. It's kind of like trying to define what a conservative or a liberal is, right? People on the left want to run as a liberal, and people on the right want to run as a conservative, you know, conservative values or whatever it might
be. But what are they really talking about?
What does that mean?
Yeah.
And so when someone says socialism, I think it's being used so much that it's hard for someone to really know what it means. I think, interestingly, I was talking to a millennial forum the other day, and one of the millennials complained, and this was a kind of an eye-opening thought to me, but our parents promised us, I'm quoting, our parents promised us that we went to college, jobs would be there for us. Mm-hmm. And they
are. Kind of like the American dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And jobs aren't there, right? And they are.
I know, I was going to take issue on that.
Yeah, they are.
Because it's a prosperous time. It's just that the wages have been stagnant.
Yeah.
Housing prices have been going up so rapidly.
Sure.
It's just hard to support yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
Even with a well-trained workforce.
Well, and what's needed to support yourself seems to go up faster than wages, to your point. Mm-hmm. And so I get it. Like, I get why millennials feel disappointed in the system mm-hmm. the way it is. Mm-hmm. It's fair criticism. What's not fair, I think, is when you couch it against the alternative mm-hmm. and you say, well, there should be mandatory minimums and everybody should have a house.
And basic income for everybody.
Income, yeah. And you start thinking about all of those things that come as a result of it. And that works fine when you're in your 20s. But when you get to your mid-30s and early 40s, you realize you can't get out of the mandatory minimums.
I can't wait for the comments to come into KCPW having two registered Republicans talking about these issues.
And we need socialism. Yeah. I'm just going to say it now with Jim DeBacchus. We need socialism now.
Dan, okay. Do you remember, I think it was the Iron Lady, Maggie Thatcher, had this great line where she said, the problem with socialism is eventually you run out of everybody else's money.
I love that. The other one I love about about that is you can always vote your way into socialism, but you have to fight your way out.
Mm.
You know,
that's pretty good.
And you look at the things that are going like in Venezuela and the destabilization that's going in South America. Boy, these are stressful times.
Yeah. I would just say, though, from the political middle, and maybe there's a little bit of, left-leaning thing here, but a lot of what I see in the candidates is talking more about taking care of the problems in capitalism, where you get unequal distributions of wealth, where you get people that don't have health care, mm-hmm. Where you see where public-private partnerships can do a lot to raise living standards and be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know.
And you see the Utah legislature giving away millions of dollars to these corporations. It's horrible.
Okay, there's Jim.
Yeah, you got it. Hey, just before we end this segment.
Jim's really going to punch me later.
Yeah. Are you seeing anything, just staying in Washington for a minute, about Trump's latest antics, deporting millions, claiming he's going to do that, some of his, trade talk, even his incredible commentary about Sarah Huckabee Sanders?
Yeah. Well, I have watched with curiosity the way Republicans continue to double down on what I will argue is probably a broken immigration policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm critical a little bit of my own party just because mm-hmm. Jim's not here or anybody else for that matter. But, we need to do more. We need to do it differently. I mean, we are a few generations, maybe less, mm-hmm. from being completely dependent on immigration to keep our businesses and factories and produce and everything else alive.
Our population doesn't grow in this country but for immigration.
Yeah.
Our birth rate is below replacement level in this country.
Right. So. Our natural in-migration, our natural population increase is below what immigration is.
Mm-hmm.
And we are being saved currently by immigration.
Yeah.
Now, everybody wants to fight, and I get it. And I have for several years, whether this is good or not, it would be in a policy I would love to explore myself. But I would love to look at a bonding system where private employers show up at the border, say how many employees they need. They bond for them to return because mm-hmm. a lot of these Mexican migrants that are here in the country and they come here illegally, they would prefer to go home
mm-hmm.
in between work. That's mm-hmm. what they prefer to do during mm-hmm. the downtime. They'd rather go see with their families. Mexican people love their families. They mm-hmm. love their culture, right?
Mm-hmm. And it is a beautiful culture.
And
I
it's
will just
beautiful.
Say that. Yeah.
So, the idea that we trap people on this side of the border because the cost to go back is so high. So looking at some kind of bonding system, looking at some kind of,
you're going to the productive middle here, Dan.
Well, on this issue, right? I mean, it's for me, that's a private market system, right? Where an employer shows up and bonds for their workers to return.
Yeah.
That's private market.
Well, we have a lot more to talk about. In our next segment, we're going to talk about a lot of local news. We'll do Inland Port. We'll do Congressman Bishop, who was challenging him. We'll talk about Spencer Cox and his fundraising.
Oh, yes. We need to talk about that. I can't wait to hear it.
So stay tuned. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Senator Dan McKay.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Jim DeBeckis on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and you're listening to One Side of the Aisle. I'm now.
Well, like the half of the aisle.
The half
right?
of the aisle. But we have so much local news going on, and I just want to run through some of these with you, Dan, and just get your commentary. But I'm going to start right at the top with, you know, it's going to be a big congressional year. You made a personal decision in the last week or so not to pursue the 4th Congressional District. You were looking at it seriously. You'd made some trips to Washington. As I understand it, you'd raised some money or at least had commitments if you did it.
Yeah.
Tell us, and this is Ben McAdams' seat, so you would have been a Republican challenger. He'll have other ones. Yeah. But give our listeners an update of what happened in your little personal reflection line.
Well, thanks. I have 6 kids. I think everyone knows that, right? And I have, as a dad, I've got my youngest is 5 years old and my oldest is 17. And, you know, this whole kind of last 6 months, I've been gearing up kind of mentally and, and also—
Because you've got a political gene in you.
To get running, yeah.
This is something you like. And
well, and I also have this, like, good, bad, or indifferent, I have this undying need to serve. Right. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, and I don't know if I've told the listeners this before, but, you know, so don't get bored. But, you know, 535 members of Congress between the House and Senate and maybe 10 people are, you know, in a position to run and win one of those seats. Mm-hmm. And when you study
5 on the Republican side, 5 on the Democrat,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
but there's about
sides.
10 that kind of get really serious
so
about it.
So you're talking about a little more than 5,500 people that in a land of 300 plus million that could actually run to serve in Washington, D.C. You think about the sacrifices of our founding fathers and the sacrifices of great leaders throughout
history.
What
our country represents.
Yeah, all those things.
Starts
right?
to speak to you.
Yeah, it does. And so, you know, in my mind, I was kind of gearing up for the race. I said this and I sent out an email to a couple of reporters and it turned into a press release, I guess. But I spent 10 days with my family in Peru. Everybody knows I've been out for the last couple of weeks. And we went down, toured Machu Picchu, did all this stuff. And I'm looking around at these incredible people that I'm walking around
your
with.
Your 6 kids.
With my kids and
your
my
incredible
wife.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I am going to miss all of this stuff.
Yeah.
If I take off and do Congress. And that was really...
Power to you.
I know family is always a little passe.
It's a hard lesson to learn after you've already been elected.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah.
In other words, if you talk to political insiders about the lifestyle of a congressman, particularly from the West, where you have these long commutes back to the nation's capital.
And I would say it goes when I say West, I'm talking about, you know, west of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Because if you're on the East Coast, you're probably in good shape, maybe. Florida's still stretched.
I learned this in a very real way because when I worked at the Environmental Protection Agency, we followed Christy Todd Whitman.
Oh, yeah.
So Governor Whitman was the administrator before Governor Leavitt or Administrator Leavitt. And so I interacted with a lot of her staff from New Jersey.
Hmm.
And they stayed on with us.
Yeah.
They were great professionals.
Yeah.
But I watched them head up to, you know, New Jersey on the weekends.
2-hour ride.
And I've got this trek.
Yep. They jump on a train.
We're really discriminated against in the West is one way to say it.
Well, and not only that, and I will say this.
And it's worse, obviously, on the West Coast.
Well, and I will say this. You know, I've thought about what could be a solution? Like, how do we deal with this to make it less painful? Because I know everybody talks about, oh, raises for Congress is horrible, you know, all these other things. But man, when you have to live 2 lives, essentially, you've got a home and a life in the district, and you've got a home on the other side of the country, and you're flying 4 to 6 hours both ways, that's a tough life.
It is. So,
do you ever think, Natalie, it'd be appropriate, like, for Utah to have a house? Mm-hmm. And in there would be
Oh.
Congressional people.
Yeah, like a condo.
Yeah, like a condo.
Oh, I can see
and
that.
And they all work together.
Yeah.
And instead of sleeping in their offices on cots and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing lap of luxury by any means, but
yeah, you know, it's widely known that the reason Reagan National remains there, even though it doesn't pass any of the FAA standards and whatnot, is because congressmen need it to get in and out of that city.
Yeah,
you
no,
know,
that's right.
Whatever, but so this is the 4th congressional district. Who will challenge Ben McAdams from all of your research and what you've seen?
So the names I think that will be in. I think the first name that I'm hearing a lot is you've got two women. Which is exciting, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
You've got Kathleen Anderson, who is wife to former Republican Party Chairman Rob Anderson. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Representative Kim Coleman, who lives in West Jordan and, you know, is in the district. And, you know, one of the beefs that some people have is that Ben doesn't live in the district. And so, you know, they want to make an issue of that. I don't think anybody cares. I think they hire the best candidate. That's what I think. But that being said, so those are the two names that I'm hearing for sure. And then you hear other names kind of on the periphery of people who might be interested, like Senator Dan Hemmert, who lives in Alpine area, in Alpine Highland.
That would be an interesting one.
And
talented,
you know,
guy.
He's very talented, very talented, very smart, you know, so he might be interested.
What do you hear from Congressman McAdams? You two are friends. Is he liking it?
You know, here's what I think. I said this in my press release. Ben McAdams is a good man, period. I would have said this if I was running against him, and I'll say it still today. And I think he recognizes, I mean, you know, we haven't talked intimately about this issue, but I think that there's probably some thoughts looking at the job of the county mayor versus the job of being a congressman. It's nice going home and sleeping in your bed every night.
It's nice being at your kids' soccer matches.
It's nice being at your soccer matches. It's nice. On the local level, you can make changes.
It's
you can
nice
do
not
things.
Sitting in an airport.
It's, yeah,
or being
all of those things.
Squished in a Delta flight.
So I know Ben, you know, he hasn't really complained to me about any of those things. Yeah, that's just not his nature.
But it's not a great lifestyle.
It's not a great life.
So here's my next question. And I think it's the 1st congressional district. Is that Rob Bishop's?
Is it
CD1?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I looked at the list of who. So this will be an open seat. And you've got Bruce Huff, who's former Republican Party chair and national committeeman, Representative Logan Wild, Scott Simpson, who's the current CEO of the Utah Credit Union Association, Representative Stephen Handy, Representative Lee Perry, Representative Paul Ray, Kaysville Mayor, Clearfield Mayor, Davis County Commissioner, even the Senate President Stuart Adams is being talked about.
That is a deep list.
Oh, and I should say, those are all the Republicans.
Yeah.
On the Democratic side, Peter Metcalf.
Yeah.
Who's the Black Diamond,
Sorry, Peter, but you know you're going to lose. I mean, it's a plus 36 Republican district.
Wow.
CD1 is, okay?
Tell our listeners what plus 36 means.
Okay, so that, in other words, just taking registered data to presidential election, registered voters, and looking at voting patterns, Republicans win, you know, by 36 points in that district, which
is... If for every one point you get, they're going to get...
Yeah. You would, I mean, I would hate to try and recall the crimes you'd have to commit to lose as a Republican, but let me just say it has to be pretty egregious.
Yeah. Well, so saying that.
But that list, if you think about that list.
Why do they all want to do this if it's not a great lifestyle?
Man. Well, okay, the people I like in that list, and okay, so while not a great lifestyle, it can be something that works well, and I think this is true, if your kids are grown up.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce's kids are clearly grown up, right?
Representative John Curtis would be a good example.
Rob Bishop's kids have grown up. I mean, you go through the people who are, I think, thriving in the D.C. environment, and even Rob Bishop would probably punch me in the arm by saying he's thriving. But, you know, you look at Mitt Romney, his kids have grown up.
Yeah.
Mike Lee, kids have grown up now, right?
Yeah.
And so you look through the people from the West who thrive in that environment and do well. They're people whose spouse can travel with them. And, you know, they're able to spend the time they need to with family on the weekends and at the same time be working and doing their thing.
Yeah, interesting. Hey, I want to do a little bit on the Inland Port, but just before we go there, Spencer Cox is the only truly announced big-time candidate for governor, at least, you know, going through the motions. He had his fundraising tallies that were posted earlier this week. I saw a lot of interest, intrigue in those. Incredible grassroots support. I would say it was a little lacking on the larger donations, business community type support. How did you read it, Dan?
Well, okay.
What does it mean? Okay. I guess.
So when someone has grassroots support, I mean, there is a saying in politics that if someone gives you money, you have their vote. Right. And if you get votes, if you get $5, $2, $1, doesn't mm-hmm. matter. Mm-hmm. People view that money as sacred to mm-hmm. them. Right. It's mm-hmm. sacred to their family. It's all those things.
Yeah.
So if they're going to give it to a political
voluntarily,
voluntarily
and without expecting something in return.
Right.
You know, and
but they are invested in that candidate. And so a small dollar contribution, you know, you look at the numbers and all those other things. A small dollar donation is a big deal. A variety of donors is a big deal.
So props to the lieutenant governor for getting so much grassroots attention.
Yes. And it was unfortunate a little bit. There was a press release of it being, you know, over 1,000. And, you know, when you dig back through the information, it was less than 1,000.
Tons of multiple givers.
Yeah.
Where someone would give this month and then the same person would give the next month, that kind of thing. Yeah.
I'm fine. Like, I get it. It sounds like a simple unforced error, right? In sports, you know, you hit the ball into the net if you're a tennis player as an unforced error, right?
Yeah. And those people won't get two votes, but they care enough that they gave in, you know, March and they gave in April or they gave in May and they gave in June.
That's
so,
right.
Something
so
to that.
You just start looking at those. I mean, the lieutenant governor stubbed his toe. It's an unforced error. Trust me, in a long campaign like the lieutenant governor has decided this is going to be, because he's starting this year as mm-hmm. opposed to waiting a little bit later on, this unforced error will fall into the background. And I think, you know, he's going to continue to see small dollar donations and I think excitement from him. So. We'll see.
Let's go to Inland Port. This is an issue that seems to be kind of tearing the city council and the mayor apart.
But it has been for a couple of years.
Has been for a while. The mayor is amending, I guess, the lawsuit for Salt Lake City.
Yay.
But now it's not only just a difference in opinion between the legislative branch or city council and the executive branch and the mayor, but it's politicized because we got a campaign running.
Oh, yeah. And it's going to be who hates the Inland Port more?
Uh-huh.
You know, I think Jim is leading in that debate right now as far as like it being a wedge issue. A wedge issue, for those listening, you're looking for an issue that separates you from your opponent and puts your opponent in a bad light and puts you in a good light, right? And right now, as a wedge issue, the Inland Port is certainly that. It's going to be interesting to watch everybody kind of piling on. And then you've got Aaron Mendenhall, who is in one of those really tough positions. When you dig in and work on a hard issue and get something passed, not everything is in the compromise that you wanted. And so everybody is poking at you for being responsible for it. But clearly, Aaron Mendenhall stepped in and tried to make a bad situation a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how that's handled in the election.
It will be. And I just think what's important, again, I'm coming from the political middle here, don't really want to pick sides, but I do think it's really important for these mayoral candidates to recognize the importance of their relationship with the state legislature and the governor's office.
Yeah.
I was driving over the North Temple Viaduct recently.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm kind of giving a little tour to my kids, and I say, see this viaduct? I said, Ben McAdams made this happen.
Yeah.
And I said, Mayor, you know, Becker was mayor at the time, and Ben McAdams was the person who, you know, worked with the legislature to get him to fund this.
Yeah.
And it had a life. I don't know if you remember all this history.
Oh, I do.
But it had a life of like 10 more years, but we needed to get tracks over it, and we needed to have the elevator down to—
It was a mess.
And so we needed it.
Yeah.
And it the state, I don't remember how much the state put in on it, but it was several million dollars.
I remember it was like 75, I think it's like 75 or 80 million.
It was a lot of money.
It's a big number.
And Mayor Becker delivered it, but it was because of his relationship with the governor's office and the legislature to make it happen.
That's right.
Dan, do you have a gripe for today?
I
wanted to mention just a little bit about Joe Dema news that hit.
Yeah. Can I tell you my least favorite thing about
the ex-campaign manager for the governor who's declaring bankruptcy? Am I getting that right?
No, that was before. I mean, he declared bankruptcy shortly before the PAC was created.
Okay.
And, you know, that was kind of that deal. And now he gets a salary and from a public, you know, entity, and he gets a salary from this PAC. And so everybody's saying this is terrible.
Yeah.
Nothing illegal is being done and everything's transparent and everything's been disclosed. The crazy thing about it is, and this is, I hate this about politics, but the people he used to work for are throwing him under the bus faster than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that when people are piling on, unless it's
real. And there's some piling on.
And unless it's real, real problems. But I mean, goodness, I'm not defending what they did or that kind of thing.
You just don't like the piling on.
I just don't like the piling on.
Okay. Did you have an, is that your gripe or?
Yeah, my gripe is, come on, politics of convenience and just throwing people under the bus. It seems like the lieutenant governor put that out there kind of as some weird, you know, investigation mm-hmm. announcement to make it look like his office has been active.
And strong.
Yeah,
whatever.
Strong mayor thing. And I just, to me, there's always a personal element to doing stuff like that.
My gripe, I saw, I think it was Donald Trump Jr. I sometimes get the president's sons kind of confused or whatever, but he took on Joe Biden for wanting to fight cancer. And where's he been the last 60 years if he was going to solve it? And I'm thinking, man, Joe Biden, you know, lost his son Beau to cancer. Who is it that isn't on the side of trying to solve cancer with all of the pain that it causes?
Yeah.
That's my gripe.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been with Senator Dan McKay. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation.
And don't forget me, Natalie!
And Jim's in here, too, vicariously. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.